Hello, and welcome to another edition of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real-World Perspectives. My name is Diana Isaacs. I am joined by my co-host, Natalie Bellini, and we have such a special episode because we are at ADA Scientific Sessions, and who do we have with us? We have Bob Gabbe, the Chief Medical Officer of ADA. So welcome, Dr. Gabbe, and if you don't mind, I guess telling, we always start off with an intro, if you could just tell our listeners a little bit about you and your backgrounds.
Sure. So Bob Gabbe, and I'm the Chief Scientific and Medical Officer here at the American Diabetes Association, and I am an endocrinologist by training, and still continue to see patients. My former institution, I was the Chief Medical Officer at the Joslin Diabetes Center in Boston, which is
Welcome. We are so honored to have you on our podcast and get some time.
I love the work that you all do. So the honor is mine.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about ADA. We've been focusing on, you know, creating guidelines that are now live so we can make changes during the year. And we've recognized that, obesity is such a part of managing type 2 as well as type 1 diabetes. Can you tell us a little bit about the changes that that came over this weekend and what was announced?
Wow. Well, you know, there's been a lot of exciting things here at Scientific Sessions, but one of the things we announced is the formation of the Obesity Association, which is a division of the American Diabetes Association, and it allows us to really focus deeper on an area that we've actually been involved in for years. You know, we funded the early research around GLP-1s and, you know, the new sort of treatments that are available. The standards of care has had a section around weight management for a number of years. We've done a lot in this field. And because of the importance of it and the opportunity that we see all around at Scientific Sessions, we want to be able to focus more deeply on this. It'll also be a platform for us to work from an advocacy perspective, because although we have effective therapies, not everybody's getting them.
Right. I mean, and some of that's because of insurance coverage. Some of that's because of obesity bias. Some of that, I could just see this, and we can even reach then into pre-diabetes. I love this.
Right.
Well, I absolutely all those things. And on top of that, we're also looking to, in the way that we create the standards of care for diabetes, to do something similar for obesity.
I love it.
That would look not only at obesity and diabetes, which we currently look at, but really more broadly, sleep apnea and various other issues that relate to people living with obesity.
So if I heard you right, there could be a separate standards of care in the future for obesity and weight management.
That is a possibility.
That would be, oh my God, is that right? It's really amazing. Would it be a separate professional practice committee?
It would be a separate group of individuals, yeah, because we would have to, we would ensure that these were the greatest experts in the world of obesity. But the same way that professional practice committee identifies those individuals as well.
So is this like...
And you guys have been those people.
Right.
So thank you for your service.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, the opportunities. So is this like two separate associations, or is the obesity then like combined with the diabetes, or it's like
it's a great question. Yeah, it's a division within the broader American Diabetes Association. Okay. So it's not a separate organization. It's part of and a division within, but it allows us to pull all of the things together under one banner.
And it's also its own disease process. You know, I mean, the American Medical Association years ago said, look, this is actually its own disease. So, you know, when we look at retinopathy as a complication of diabetes, and we have the eye management chapter of the standards of care, this is a disease and we need to treat it as such. And, you know, even when we look at how does this affect clinical practice, we say that all the time. How does this affect your clinical practice? In the beginning, what they did in the EHR was say, oh, the BMI was 34, and it would ding it and it would be like, okay, that person's clinically obese. And it would automatically create part of the note that you may or may not have done anything about.
Yes.
And now we need to take a step back and say, this is a disease. And if we're not treating it as part of the process, whether we have diabetes or not, we're missing so much and we're causing harm long term. So I am so excited about the idea that it needs its own division. Whereas technology and diabetes doesn't need its own division, it needs to be part of the ADA standard of care. And I see that as a difference.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And given the number of people affected, it really is this huge public health issue that that deserves more attention. And now we have effective tools that we did not have before. And that is
part makes it part of it too, right? Absolutely.
I mean, you know,
right.
At scientific sessions, there's been just like an
explosion. So much, right? Yeah.
Literally, like we looked in the last 2 years, the number of presentations with just obesity in the title has doubled every year.
Wow. Oh, yeah. That's incredible. Right.
I still have more questions. So is this kind of quote? I know I'm like, it just,
your head is spinning.
Right. Head is spinning. Well, I'm wondering, is it going to be updated every year or living updates kind of like the way the standards of care are now for diabetes? And is it going to focus on people that have prediabetes and diabetes, or is it going to be more broad to anyone with obesity?
Diana, those are great questions. And, you don't have all of the answers yet. But what I will say, though, is it will be broad, and we're still figuring out the, you know, it's also, we don't know how quickly the field moves, right? Like, there was a time where yearly updates and the standards of care were all you needed, right? There wasn't that much that happened
right
in a year.
And now.
Now, yeah.
Right.
I mean,
now we're just.
After this meeting, there's already new stuff, right?
Right.
So I think time will tell, and we're working through those details. But the goal is to get guideline information to clinicians so that they can treat this as a disease.
And as anything else, the ADA is going to do an amazing job of saying we need a living, breathing document, and we will update as needed based on the science and based on, you know, what is happening. So if that needs to be done once or twice a year, you reconvene and say, okay, if it can wait a year because there isn't a change, but as the number of medications and treatments and things are just, I mean, it feels like every minute, I think it's going to be more. As a person, my prediction, if we were betting right now as the three of us, I would say it's going to be an ADA standard, a living, breathing document, number one, and something that has to be updated regularly just because of the science that we're...
But at this point, even if it was updated every year, that would be actually
so much better.
Because our obesity guidelines, I think, have really lagged behind.
Absolutely.
Many don't incorporate the newer medications. And so no matter what, it's going to be a vast improvement, I think, will really help clinicians.
Yeah, I think very much so. And, you know, one of the things that allows us to do this is we've been, you know, developing the standards of care year after year. So we have a lot of experience about how to organize
right.
and how to, what the process should look like, everything. And so we can take that model and apply it to obesity.
I love that.
So I know you have limited time, but I'm really curious, like along the lines of obesity programming here at ADA, any specific highlights, anything you've been really excited about that was presented here related to obesity?
Wow.
At least that limits yes. to obesity.
Right. Yeah, I mean, even that.
Right.
You know,
right.
You take one of the files and you know,
right.
go deep. Right. You know, I would say themes.
Yeah.
That's,
right.
That's, you know, sure. And I would say, you know, two big themes are one, the medications we already have being beneficial in other ways. And so that's theme number one. Theme number two is the pipeline.
Right.
So on theme number one, you know, new impacts or new readouts, you know, one sleep apnea. You know?
Yeah. Which was amazing.
Right.
I mean, the data is incredible. I would not have guessed that it would be that significant.
Right.
And, you know, like we don't think about sleep apnea in our world as much, but there are 80 million people with sleep apnea, most of them undiagnosed. And I don't know about your patients, but most of mine will not wear a CPAP.
Oh, they're very right. difficult.
They're uncomfortable, you know, so
great.
It ends up not happening. And we know that there is, you know, poor metabolic consequences from untreated sleep apnea and a variety of symptoms. And there is CPAP, there's medications, there are no medications, and there's surgery now for the first time. There's
right. That's so exciting. Absolutely.
So that's exciting. I think the other things of, you know, new, you know, kidney disease and the flow trial.
Yeah, right? That would
even effective in the presence of SGLT2,
right, for their additional, additional benefits.
So it's like one more agent that you know is beneficial. So I think that's,
I mean, the delaying that onset of the need to dialyze a patient changes their trajectory of life. It really does. So the idea that we can use, you know, an SGLT2, finerenone, and a GLP-1 and say, look, we were in this kind of angle, yeah, now we're at this kind of angle, and we've changed that outcome. I love it. I do.
Yeah. And you know, particularly since, you know, if for most people, if they have, you know, mild kidney disease,
right,
it's really all as long as you prevent them from getting worse,
we're good.
They're
right.
Fine.
Right.
Like they would never
right.
know that
they would
problem.
Never know.
It doesn't bother them. You know, it's all good, right? It's really because it's a harbinger of it's going to progress
right.
End stage renal disease. And once people develop end stage renal disease, their, you know, mortality goes away.
Oh, man. Absolutely. And, you know, the hard part with that in clinical care is it's hard to look at someone and say, your kidney function is going to drop very, very quickly.
Yeah.
And yours is going to be, you know, you're going to end up with a GFR of 35, you know, at 104 years old, and you're going to be okay. So using these medications early and being aggressive is so important. And I think that's been a big message here is don't wait. Don't, you know, we used to teach that treat to fail. So wait till this happens and then give them another thing and wait. And we're doing it in diabetes differently now. We're doing it in kidney disease differently now. And the goal would be that we're going to do it in obesity differently now, right? Let's treat it early. Don't wait till a BMI of 40. Don't wait until this person says they can't exercise or they have knee problems, or start early and aggressively.
Well, I want to thank you so much.
Yes.
Dr. Gabay, and also congrats on an amazing conference.
And for that wonderful
to help people with diabetes.
Well, thank you. It's been exciting, and I appreciate being on your show, and I'm a big, big fan, so this is great.
Yay, and thank you, everyone, for tuning in. That concludes this episode of Diabetes Dialogue, straight from ADA Scientific Sessions.